The death toll due to tropical depression Agathon now at 20, and it's still expected to rise. Meanwhile, a new typhoon has entered the Philippine area of responsibility. Ukraine bracing for another major Russian offensive in its eastern region. And on In Focus, we'll be speaking with the spokespersons of Senator Pangilo Lacson and Labor Leader Calyodi de Guzman for the latest on their campaigns. Hi, I'm Pamina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. We begin with an update on the devastation caused by tropical depression Agathon. It has now left at least 20 dead. The National Disaster Risk Reduction and Management Council says 14 of the casualties died from a landslide in Baybay City in Leyte. The rest drowned from flash floods in parts of Mindanao.
Nagkaroon po ng preemptive evacuation ang local government. Kaya lang sa hindi ito inasahan na mangyari talaga kasi hindi naman siya ganun ka high risk yung area for landslide. Siguro sir, nagkaroon lang talaga ito ng accumulation ng tubig.
More than 17,000 people are still in evacuation centers in affected provinces. The NDRRMC has also started assessing the damage to agriculture and infrastructure.
We have received a report for agricultural damage, preliminary report, counting damage to crops at 900,000 pesos worth, with 91 houses that had been damaged as well, and some damages to infrastructure, initially computed at 250,000.
The casualty count in Baybay, Leyte, expected to go up as authorities search for survivors at another landslide site. Baybay Mayor Jose Carlos Casi says the landslide nearly swallowed an entire village.
Dalawang beses nag-landslide eh. May maliit na landslide, so nakatakbo pa yung mga tao bago sinunda ng isang malaking landslide na tumabo na sa buong barangay. Meron tayong 210 households eh. Pati yung mga barangay official kasi sila ang tumulong eh. Naabutan daw yung kapitan nakaligtas pero Montecren. Uh-huh. Pero yung mga tanod niya naabutan.
And let's get an update now on the situation in storm-ravaged Leyte from our correspondent Sharon Evita. Sharon, go ahead. What else can you tell us?
Yes, Carmina, at least 23 people died while six others were reported missing in eastern Visayas due to the massive flooding and several landslides triggered by the onslaught of tropical depression Agathon. Based on the report from the Baybay City Disaster Risk Reduction and Management Council, 22 of the fatalities were from some residential areas which were buried in a landslide. In Barangay Mailhi, a total of 11 residents were confirmed to have died of the landslide, while five more were recovered in Barangay Cantagnos. Two cadavers were recovered in Barangay Maypatag, another one in Barangay Candadam, and one in Visayas State University. Baybay CDRRMO added that the search and rescue operations for the landslide area in Barangay Cantagnos is still going on until this morning. Last night, the number of survivors who were found alive are still increasing, and they were brought to Baybay City Immaculate Conception Hospital. But the heavy rains continues to pour now, which is giving the rescuers a hard time doing the search and rescue operations. Baybay City Sangguniang Panlungsod has already convened this morning to treat matters concerning the Typhoon Agathon, including the possible declaration of Baybay City under a state of calamity. Carmina, with the damages Agathon has brought in Baybay City, Baybayanons are already calling for help, not just for food, potable water, medicine, but also they're asking for more doctors who would help treat the wounded survivors. Back to you, Carmina.
All right, Sharon, I just want to talk briefly about that residential area. and the landslide that happened there. Talk to us more about that. Is this area landslide prone? Has this been prone to landslides even in the past? Or is this the first time that this has happened?
Carmina, we are yet to find out if whether these areas are really landslide prone areas. But with the days of continuous rain, this has brought the areas to landslide.
And when you talk about food, water, medicine that that are needed right now as we speak, what does the local government there say about this? How are they not able to provide this to the affected residents?
Actually, Carmina, the devastation here in Baybay City is really big, that even the local government unit was not, they were not expecting that the extent of the damage will be like this. So the residents, including the local government unit, were not able to prepare for this damage.
And based on your observation, Sharon, is this yet again another case of the first responders being victims as well of the storm?
So far, we have not yet encountered that situation in Carmina.
All right. Okay. We're going to have to leave it at that. Sharon Evita there joining us on the line. Take care, Sharon, and keep safe. Back here in the studio, over 10,000 passengers are stranded at various ports across the country due to Agaton. Those include over 3,600 people held up in the Bicol region and about 1,500 in eastern Visayas. This comes amid a travel rush ahead of the Holy Week break. The Philippine Coast Guard said it has deployed hundreds of additional personnel to manage the stranded passengers, as well as the expected influx of more travelers. Ukraine expecting a major Russian offensive in the east any time now. According to Ukraine's defense ministry, Russian forces have finished regrouping and have moved into the Donetsk and Luhansk region. A column of tanks and armed equipment were seen on the streets of Volnovakha, that's a city in Donetsk. Meanwhile, Ukraine is also bracing for the imminent fall of the besieged city of Mariupol. Speaking to the South Korean parliament, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky appealed for military assistance. He said tens of thousands have been killed in Mariupol since the fighting began. Austria's chancellor sees bleak prospects for the end of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Chancellor Karl Nehammer says it was clear after his meeting with Vladimir Putin that the Russian president has entered into a war of logic and that the offensive in eastern Ukraine is being prepared with determination. Nehammer adds Putin blames Ukrainians for the atrocities in Bucha. The Austrian chancellor is the first European leader to visit Putin since the start of Moscow's invasion. The World Trade Organization warns Russia's war in Ukraine could almost halve local trade growth this year. It sees global trade growing between 2.4% and 3% in 2022, down from its earlier forecast of 4.7%. The WTO says this will not only be felt by the people of Ukraine, because reduced trade will result in higher food and energy prices around the world. It adds, while shares of Russia and Ukraine in overall world trade and output are relatively small, they are important suppliers of essential products, including wheat and barley. The WTO sees the reduced shipments of grains and other food products hiking the prices of agricultural goods, triggering negative consequences for food security in poorer regions. Japan confirms its first case of the Omicron XC strain. The health ministry said the patient is a woman in her 30s who arrived at the Narita airport from the U.S. last March. She is fully vaccinated and is asymptomatic. The XC strain is said to be a combination of the BA1 and BA2 subtypes of the Omicron variant. It was first detected in the U.K., which has recorded over 1,100 cases as of April 5th. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte not budging on his mask mandate. In his weekly address, Duterte said he will require the wearing of face masks until the end of his term in June. That's as he cited the resurgence of infections in other countries, which he believes was caused by the complacency of authorities.
There is no way that masks will not be required. It will be a part of the protocol for a long time until the last day of my office. Yan ang order ko at yan ang sundin ninyo. We are not out of the woods, actually. We are still in a bind.
President Duterte again warning about another possible surge in cases in the country amid the emergence of new COVID variants.
There's a distinct possibility that there will be another surge. Maybe not the COVID-19, the original. We have met the challenge with the vaccination. But itong mga variants, and we do not know if the variants would really be powerful or weak as to put us again in the bind.
The Philippine Health Department reported 707 severe and critical COVID-19 patients in hospitals. That figure is higher than the previous week's 692 patients. Meanwhile, active cases are at their lowest since January 3rd, with only 273 new infections recorded Monday. For the previous week, the DOH recorded over 1,900 new infections. The daily average was at 272. More than 400 deaths were also reported. Some Holy Week activities like the traditional procession of holy figures may not be allowed in several areas just yet. That's according to the Catholic Bishops' Conference of the Philippines, citing coronavirus risks.
Pag sinabi po na hindi mo na pwede yung procession dahil siguro mataas yung kaso, iba pa yung level ng quarantine, baka hindi pa rin po gagawin niya. Pero dito po sa NCR, malino naman po na pwede na naman gawin ito kasi pumapayag naman siya. Kung hindi pa iintulutan ng IATF, wala din po magagawa simbahan.
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, In Focus turns the spotlight on the presidential campaigns of Senator Pangilo Lacson and Labor leader Leody de Guzman. More on that when we come back. Stay with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. We're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The death toll due to tropical depression Agaton now at 20 and is still expected to rise. Meanwhile, a new typhoon has entered the Philippine area of responsibility and Ukraine bracing for another major Russian offensive in its eastern region. The Commission on Elections denying allegations of pre-shaded ballots in some precincts for overseas voting. In separate Facebook posts, voters from Singapore and Dubai claim they received pre-shaded ballots at the embassy and were only handed new ones when they complained. The Philippine Embassy in Singapore refuted this, but it admitted there was one incident wherein a spoiled ballot from Sunday's voting exercise was inadvertently given to a voter. The COMELEC vows to look into the matter.
Kapag halimbawa, sabihin na natin totoo na may pre-shading, dapat nakita yun ng watcher. Number one. Number two, meron kasi tinatawag na minutes of voting. Ang tanong ko, yung bang pre-shaded na balota at yung incident na yun, na-report ba yun sa minutes of voting? Kasi kung walang na-report sa minutes of voting, at wala rin nakita yung watcher, wala rin na-object yung watcher, isa lang ibig sabihin, ito yung sinasabi niya.
Vice Presidential candidate Sara Duterte Carpio expressing grave concern about reports of pre-shaded ballots in voting precincts abroad. The reports claim it was the presidential daughter's name that was pre-shaded in the ballots, along with some of her senatorial candidates. Duterte Carpio reiterates she does not condone cheating. Over in Hong Kong, five more polling precincts have been added to accommodate the larger-than-expected turnout in Filipino overseas voters. COMELEC Commissioner Marlon Cascuejo approved the move after some Filipinos were asked to postpone casting their ballots due to overcapacity. One OFW says this should have been done sooner.
Sana po ginawa nila kahapon pa kasi ang hirap po namin considering na Sunday po ang first day of elections dito. Tapos marami po yung mga day off ng Sunday. Kung makalabas sila, Sunday sila lumalabas. Yung iba po kasi, mahirap palabasin these days because of COVID.
Yes, guys. Meanwhile, Filipinos in Saudi Arabia experience a smooth voting process. For one voter, going to the consulate is a bigger issue for his peers.
So far, yung from Mecca, wala pa kasi ngayon Ramadan.
So, okay.
Ang usually, sa weekend sila pupunta and then problema lang yung sasakyan.
Mm-mm.
So, nag-a-arrange ba sila na mga sasakyan kasi malayo kami sa Jeddah, mga 1 hour. So, yun na yung pinakamalapit to.
In the U.S., overseas voting in San Francisco also in full swing. Let's get an update now from our North America Bureau correspondent, Romel Conclara. Romel, over to you. Good afternoon from Manila.
Good afternoon, Carmina. And well, here in the United States, I was at the Philippine Consulate in San Francisco, 9 a.m. this morning, watching the very first ballot being processed inside the consulate. And the staff has been preparing for this for months, making sure that these votes are well ready to be counted and that the machines were working properly, filled out and sealed. And that we even had one poll watcher available to make sure to protect the integrity of the process. Now, I just want to say for the Philippine Consulate in San Francisco, it has 10 states under its jurisdictions. That means Alaska, Northern California, Colorado, Idaho, Montana, Northern Nevada, Oregon, Washington, Wyoming, and Utah. Now, out of these 10 states, there are 47,711 registered voters. According to the consulate, they have mailed out over 12,000 ballots to these registered voters, and they are working hard to send out the remaining ballots in the next few days. The consular staff also reminds all voters to follow all the directions and make sure you seal those ballots properly to ensure that your vote gets counted. Now, they do have until 4 a.m. on May 9th to turn in their ballot, but they do urge voters to not wait until the last minute. There is now everything, it's all through mail. But there, if you are in the San Francisco Bay Area, there is a drop box in the consulate lobby. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Romel Conclara there joining us live from San Francisco. Keep safe, Romel. Take care. And from there, let's now head to the U.S. East Coast as more election materials for overseas voting are finally delivered to the Philippine Consulate in New York. Our North America Bureau correspondent Don Tagala now joins us with more details. Don, over to you.
Carmina, Philippine Consul General El Mercado says registered voters can now breathe a sigh of relief in the Northeast Coast. 24 boxes of OAV ballots, vote counting machines, and other paraphernalia finally arrived at the Philippine Consulate in New York just today after the planned April 10 commencement of the overseas absentee voting, which is now delayed. COMELEC Commissioner Marlon Cascuejo points fingers at their suppliers for the delayed shipment of OAV materials. Meanwhile, Philippine activist groups met with the Consul General to raise their concerns about the delayed OAV ballots. They want to know exactly when OAV ballots will start arriving at the homes of registered Filipino voters, as well as concrete steps to make sure that every single one of the 39,048 ballots make it back on time to the consulate to be counted. The next steps, according to the Consul General, the consular staff will be working overtime to get all the ballots mailed out by the end of the week. Filled out ballots should be received at the consulate on or before May 9th, 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, or that's May 9th at 7 p.m. Philippine Time. Otherwise, late ballots will not be counted. Carmina?
Thanks a lot, Don Tagala, there joining us from New York. Take care, Don. Keep safe. Vice President Lenny Robredo and Senator Francis Pangilinan are campaigning in La Union. Our very own Adrian Ayalin now joins us with an update. Adrian.
Hi, Carmina. Vice President Lenny Robredo said that the incident at the Philippine Embassy in Singapore on alleged pre-shaded ballot or stray ballot should be looked into by appropriate government institutions. VP Lenny said that this is a cause for concern for her as the integrity of the 2022 elections is at stake. VP Lenny granted an interview with the media here in San Fernando City in La Union province, where she attended a people's rally organized by her supporters held at the St. Louis College auditorium. As usual in other northern provinces that she visited, the supporters said babawi kami after VP Lenny said that she lost miserably in the province of La Union. It's a long day for VP Lenny today. She is also scheduled to go to Catanduanes province after this people's rally. Also, VP Lenny said in the interview that she expressed indignation over the series of false information, fake news that proliferated in the past days. Yesterday, regarding her daughter Aika, also about the supposed solicitation being done by the office of the vice president on an alleged anti-legal drugs campaign, as well as exit polls showing a commanding lead supposedly by her rival Bongbong Marcos. She attributed these directly to her rival Marcos Jr., although Marcos Jr. has been saying that he does not subscribe to negative campaigning, but VP Lenny is directly tagging Marcos Jr. to the series of fake news that have proliferated in the past few days. VP Lenny, she is scheduled to attend another people's rally in Catanduanes this afternoon. And also tomorrow, she has another people's rally in the Bicol region. And after that, of course, will be a Holy Week break until Friday. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Adrian Ayalian there joining us on the line. Take care, Adrian. And for InFocus today, we'll get up to speed on the presidential campaigns of Senator Panfilo Lacson and Labor leader Caliodi de Guzman joining us now. It's the spokesperson of Senator Panfilo Lacson, Ashley Acedillo. He joins us via phone. And the campaign manager of Caliodi de Guzman, Sunny Melencio, joins us via Zoom. Gentlemen, good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carmina. Good afternoon. And good afternoon to you, Sunny.
Good afternoon, Ashley. Good afternoon, Carmina.
All right. I'm going to start off with Sunny first. Sunny, how would you describe your campaign less than a month ago before May 9?
We're actually on the second stage of the campaign. Natapos na namin yung what we call the unification of our base, our mass base, mga organization namin all over the country. So now, right now, we're doing sorties. Sa iba-ibang mga probinsya. So, katatapos lamang namin dito sa Luzon. And then, Mindanao in the past, but we're going back to Mindanao, Iloilo, and Negros. So, it's going good. Kasi parang ang stage namin ngayon, nung magsimula kami, Caliodi was unknown, hindi siya kilala. But right now, pagka sa sorties namin, kilala na siya ng mga tao. So, si Caliodi yung kandidato ng manggagawa. So, we're quite happy with that. Kasi nagmamarka na ang aming campaign.
Mm-hmm. But is that mass base that you speak of formidable enough to deliver the votes? We all know what happened. TUCP backing Marcos Jr. instead of going with Caliodi, who is from the sector. Is that a loss to you? How are you going to, or where are you going to look for the votes that were taken by TUCP?
Yes, it's quite a loss because TUCP is also with an alliance together with us before. And I think yung alliance na binuo nila, it's also a loss with Lenny because there was an alliance of Labor, All for Lenny. So yung aming alliance sa Labor ay has shifted already from there on kasi hindi naman namin sila madidiktahan kung ano yung kanilang choice. But anyway, what we're doing right now is we're building the labor base, yung mga dati naming base. In fact, We're doing a campaign on the 750 minimum wage nationwide, and it's getting traction, and we're getting labor unions from the ground, sa iba-ibang mga federations, including unions coming from TUCP. So sometimes it doesn't matter kung ang kanilang heads ay kay Marcos or with the other politicians, as long as yung base nila ay mararating namin, mamomobilize namin. At sa ngayon nga na kasama namin dun sa pag-file ng 750 minimum wage sa nationwide, sa iba't ibang regional wage boards, pinag-uusapan yan, and we're doing actions on the ground. So it doesn't unfaze us.
All right. From there, we're going to go to Ashley Acedillo, spokesperson of Senator Panfilo Lacson. When you look at the campaign now, how it's going and with the developments the past couple of weeks, is this where you projected your campaign to be?
Well, we would have expected ourselves to be in a better position, Carmina. No? But if you have to remember, a few weeks back, the last time I came before you in an interview, we were dealing with a very significant development. But to be quite frank, no, we're well past that. And as a sort of a blessing in disguise, it all the more energized our base. There's really something about, you know, such an act of, shall we say, betrayal, no? To get our base of supporters not just angry, but mobilized and energized as well. So that's where we are now. Mm-hmm. Now let's deal with the surveys, no? Of course, we have our misgivings about the surveys, but they are what they are, so let's deal with them. So what we're dealing with now is what we consider a perception problem. As a primary choice, our candidate is nowhere near the top, right? Mm-hmm. However, as a second choice, he is either a solid first or a second to another candidate, which gives us this very wonderful window of opportunity, which is to convince the people who would otherwise vote for a primary candidate to consider our candidate, Panfilo Lacson, as their primary candidate instead for president. So that's now where we're shifting to in terms of our focus in the campaign, Carmina.
Yeah, but when you talk about the perception problem, as you call it, Ace, that's not on the voter. That's on your principle. And this late in the game, how do you propose to solve that major problem of the campaign?
Well, it's both a function of an effective communications campaign as well as an effective and very active ground campaign, Carmina. So it's really boots on the ground as well as, you know, filling the airwaves with the message that hindi sayang yung boto ng mga botante para sa isang napaka-kwalipikado, in fact, the most qualified candidate in terms of experience, competence, and integrity kung iboboto nila si Ping Lacson for president. Mm-hmm. And of course, Tito Soto for vice president. So it's really hammering home that message. The perception, like you said, no, it's really a problem. It must be dealt with. But at the same time, like I mentioned in the very same survey, na may nakikitaan naman tayo na window of opportunity, Carmina.
You speak of the tandem, Ashley, and a lot of people are looking to break that tandem. A lot of people now looking to Senator Panfilo Lacson to sort of make that self-sacrifice and consolidate the opposition. Why do you think this is so? Why do you think they're looking to him and not to anyone else?
Well, Carmina, we should first deal with the fact, no, that candidates should only win on their merit. It's really a it's proceeding from a faulty premise. First of all, that in order for a particular candidate to win, another candidate must have to withdraw. First of all, the numbers don't support that. In fact, if the speculation is that if Ping Lacson withdraws, his votes will go to this expected candidate. No, it does not. Both the surveys, the two primary surveys, as well as our own statistical models, don't support that contention. So all the more reason that he should not withdraw. Mm-hmm. Secondly, for the reasons that I just cited earlier, all the more reason that he should stay in the race, because there is that window of opportunity. And given the fact that we still have a few more weeks remaining, and if we're able to capitalize on that remaining time, we may just, you know, win by the nose of our hair. So we're still in that point in this campaign Carmina. So those calls for Ping Lacson to withdraw are really not only uncalled for, they're misguided, actually.
But when you talk to... I'm sorry to cut you there, Ace, but I want to talk now and move on to the topic of former Quezon City Mayor June Simon, Senator Panfilo Lacson, revealing that the former mayor actually tried to talk to him. And it's not just about withdrawing, but withdrawing to consolidate. What actually happened there?
Well, I wasn't there in person when it happened, but I'm aware that it happened, Carmina, no? And it was really it was a very, very unfortunate incident, we must say, no? First of all, it was kumbaga ang pakiramdam namin doon, sino bang nagbasbas kay former mayor June Simon? Pangalawa, may some sort of misrepresentation doon eh. Kasi that request also passed through me. And ang sinabi lang doon, parang he was parlaying his friendship with Tito Soto and meron silang pag-uusapan na political. Hindi niya tinumbok mismo yung sadya niya kay Ping Lacson. So, you know, may element of deception at yung hindi pagdidiretso ba. So, you know, if sinabi na niya kung ano yung intention niya when he wanted to talk to Senator Lacson, you know, we could have saved him the trouble of going to Pampanga just to bring that topic up. Kasi, you know, when he was told clearly and alam niyo, and unequivocally, hindi talaga mag-iwalay ang tambalang Ping Lacson at Tito Soto, you know, he had no choice but to leave in a hurry.
And Ace,
so basically, that's what happened.
Yeah, Ace, do you think that this was done just on the part of the former Quezon City mayor, or naniniwala ho ba kayo na may basbas ito ng kampo ni Vice President Lenny Robredo at siya talaga ang ginawang sugo para makipag-usap dito kay Senator Panfilo Lacson? Did this
to
have
fair,
any... Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, Carmina, not to both the Vice President and to former Mayor June, it's really hard to say. No? I don't have any basis to say that is so or to say otherwise. No? I would leave that, and that is best answered, I think, by both camps. No? But as far as we are concerned, hindi niya dinaretso sa amin kung ano yung sadya niya. Sinabi niya lang at pinarlay niya pa yung kanyang dating pagsasama kay Tito Sen. No? And to us, really, that was, you know, sana wag ganon. Kasi hindi yan maganda na pipilitin mong paghiwalayin ang isang tambalan na hindi lang isang tambalang political. No? It's really anchored on friendship and a long history of working together. And, you know, we will be served better if these two actually made it both to the highest offices of the land, Carmina. So, really, alam mo, napaka-unwelcome, napaka-uncalled for ng mga efforts of late, no? Na paghiwalayin itong tambalang ito.
And what do you say, very briefly, before I go to Sonny Melencio again, what do you say to those who think that the senator now is only in it for himself and not anymore for the country? The fact that he has been sort of declining all these opportunities, according to some, for a consolidation of the opposition. Ace.
Well, doon sa mga, babalik na rin ko yan, Carmina, doon sa mga nagsasabi ng ganyan, ang mga nagsasabi po ng ganyan, sinasabi nila yan para sa kanilang kandidato, hindi para sa bayan. So that is the better way to look at it, Carmina, and not as they say na yung pagpatuloy ng pagtakbo ng aking kandidato eh para lamang sa sarili niya. Hindi po, sa kabaligtaran niyan, ang panawagan ng mga pagbibitiw eh panawagan po para sa sariling interes at para sa interes ng iisang kandidato, hindi po para sa bayan. I mean, let's not kid each other here, Carmina.
Let's go to Sonny Melencio now. Sonny, you know, in various appearances, you have Caliote de Guzman and Vice President Lenny Robredo sharing the same stand on various issues, which is leading to some people to think that maybe there is an opportunity there for Caliote to withdraw and consolidate forces with the Vice President. How feasible is that? How possible is that? How open is Caliote to that kind of a scenario? Sonny.
There have been feelers coming from mga supporters ni Lenny for us to withdraw at sumama kay Lenny. I think they're doing that with other candidates too. But we discussed that and we believe that na kailangan namin magpatuloy. Kasi sa lahat ng kandidato, even including Lenny, wala kaming nakikita na nagdadala ng platforma, for instance, na anti-neo-liberal policies. It's still the same policies na nagpapahirap sa atin yung gagawin. And for us, there's no ifs and buts pagdating dun sa mga issue ng halimbawa yung NTFL cut, yung sa environment issues, yung sa divorce, yung sa abortion, maraming mga issues. So it's not really that nagkakasundo kami si Caliodi at Lenny doon sa mga issues na nabanggit. May mga malalaking diferensya. At si Caliodi mismo ang nagsabi, hanggang hindi kami nakakarinig noong kandidato na nagdadala ng bagong ekonomiya, anti-neoliberalism at bagong politika para sa representasyon ng pinakamaraming mamamayan, especially the working people, ay magpapatuloy kami.
Balikan lang natin sana yung sinabi mo, may mga nagpapadala ng feelers, they have been feelers, you said, or these official communication coming from the HQ of Vice President Lenny Robredo. Talk to us more about that.
I think it was mga supporters nga na kung I think nasa kay team Lenny. At nabanggit nga namin, ang naging sagot namin actually ay okay naman ang unity, but we want unity on the ground. Hindi yung parang unity na may mag-withdraw. I think it's about time na ang dali natin pagkakaisa. Kasi alam mo, I'll introduce this into the equation. Yung strategy ng Marcos Duterte is the same strategy in 2019 na gagamitin nila dito sa election na ito. And
how
what
so?
Is that strategy? That strategy is to make use of their yung combined forces ng mga trapo and political dynasties from top down. Mm-hmm. Remember, they control, we're not only talking of Marcos Duterte, we're talking of Arroyo, we're talking of Estrada, we're talking of the yung mga cronies na malalaki, Villar, etc. We're talking of big sections of political dynasties and business na susuporta.
So Sunny, when you said a while ago that there has to be unity on the ground and not just unity by withdrawal, what exactly do you mean by that?
It means we have to watch out. Kaya ko in-introduce yung equation ng there's already a machinery in place para dun sa massive vote buying na ginawa noong 2019. Kasi ang ating from Congress down to governor natin ay majority is with Duterte, yung 81 provinces na yan. And talagang dalawa lang ata yung LP dyan. And then you look at the mayor. So it's there. So yung kanilang nilagay na parang trending doon sa survey, and now itong machinery na yan napapagana, and we actually knew of that machinery dahil nalaman namin yan noong 2019 pa. So we have to really watch out for that. We have to mobilize. So natutuwa din kami na mobilization ang ginagawa ni VP Lenny. And we're also telling their forces, so let's mobilize on the ground. Kasi halimbawa, nagkita yung Lenny supporters, mga kabataan doon sa Calaca, Batangas, just recently. Nakita nila si Caliodi, nilapitan nila si Caliodi, and Caliodi was shouting, don't vote for BBM, don't vote for Marcos Duterte. So that's a kind of unity that we're talking about.
All right, so let me go to Ashley Acedillo and get his thoughts about that. Unity on the ground against a Marcos presidency, is that something that you'd be willing to participate in?
Well, I think if there's one point of convergence, no, not just with the camp of Caliodi, but even the camp of the Vice President at yung mga iba pang tumatakbo, Carmina, it is really ensuring that our elections are honest, orderly, and peaceful. I've been participating. I have been accredited by the COMELEC as a source code reviewer as well. No? I've participated in various activities wherein pumunta tayo sa mga iba't ibang warehouse, tiningnan natin yung proseso ng at mga sistema na pinapairal sa pag sasagawa ng elections natin. Doon pa lamang
Armina, we have seen a lot of problems. And since the overseas voting has started, some of these problems are already emerging. Mm-hmm. If only for that common objective of ensuring
Ace?
Na yung mananaig talaga. That is a potential. Yes. Yes, Carmina?
Yeah, sorry. We kind of lost you there for a while. But yeah, so you were saying if there's one point of convergence, it's about ensuring that these elections will be held the way it should be held without any iota of doubt. But you're saying problems are already emerging. So how do you think all these campaigns can band together to ensure a fair and honest elections?
Well, first of all, Carmina, all of the candidates have their own teams. In fact, for our own candidate, we have our own IT and cybersecurity team, no? And these are composed of experts, not just on information technology, but also on cybersecurity. And ganun din, similarly, yung mga ibang kandidato, meron silang mga similarly organized teams. At alam nyo, yung automated election system, at the very least, no, at the highest level, is divided into three. The canvassing control system, the election management system, and the vote counting machines. And that system na pinapatakbo yung vote counting machines. And those are run by at least a dozen ICT systems. Samantalang, ang focus lang natin ay yung source code para doon sa VCMs. Hindi pa natin nakikita end-to-end, no?
Mm-mm.
Paano tatakbo ang election natin. In fact, humihingi nga kami, for example, ng diagram kung paano yung consolidation ng votes from the VCMs to the consolidating servers until doon sa main server.
And what has the COMELEC told you about that?
Yes, they have heard us officially and unofficially. Mm-hmm. And we have told them, in fact, both closed door and in a written request. And we have also made a certain request. We have at least three requests that if either one of these are granted, alam mo, it will go a long way in ensuring that not only the candidates, but even our common voters will have a way of ensuring that, you know, that elections should be what they are: honest, orderly, and peaceful.
And have you heard from them? You haven't heard from them yet.
No, we haven't heard from them yet. We have also reached out individually to the chairman and the commissioners. So sa amin lang sana, pakinggan tayo, no? Hindi naman kasi para to sa kandidato lang namin, kundi para sa lahat po ng bumuboto at naniniwala na sana yung boto nila talagang totohan ng mabilang at yung totoong kagustuhan ng taong bayan, and yun ang manaig. And I think, I renew that invitation to all the other candidates. That is, I think, one common area na pwede kaming magsama-sama. Na, alam mo yon, na panatilihing maayos at makatotohanan yung ating napagboto.
All right.
Darating na May 9, Carmina.
Okay, I'm gonna go back to Sonny Malencia now. And Ace, same question will go to you. You know, less than a month to go before the May 9 elections. And the toxicity levels across all campaigns, when you look at social media, when you look at, you know, in real life as well, people have been really fighting it out for their principles. But what do you tell them about this toxicity once a winner is proclaimed? What is a guiding principle to your supporters to address the demonization that has gone on in the past couple of months, and to move forward after a winner has been proclaimed? Do you even talk about that in the campaign? Sunny, I'll go to you first, and then Ace, you follow after. Go ahead.
Yes, actually, yung iba nga nagsasabi, kasi we're not in this game this is the first time na sumama kami dito sa electoral game na nagpatakbo ng presidente. dati-dati doon lang kami sa party list. Mm-hmm. So talagang ngayon namin naintindihan, yung iba nga sinasabi, ay may, parang panalo na tayo kasi nahandyan si Caliodi sa mga entablado. Kailan ka nakakita ng mga nakaraang eleksyon na nagsasalita yung manggagawa? Wala noon. So in that sense, at saka marami nang nakaka-identify, may traction yung aming mga plataforma. But you know, I'm a believer of kung si Bongbong reads Machiavelli, the Italian philosopher. I read din later once si Antonio Gramsci, also an Italian philosopher, that it's a pessimism of the intellect but optimism of the will. Meaning, despite yung mga ganitong problema, there is hope. At ang hope na yan, kasi hindi naman natatapos sa election yan. Lagi namin sinasabi, so we'll still consolidate our forces. We'll go ahead with what we're... babalik kami sa kalsada, mga kalsada kami. Pero ang sinasabi ko, itong period na ito, kahit yung period na ito, we want to expose the system. This is already disgusting for us Filipinos. Yung klase ng eleksyon na meron tayo, na binibili yung moto, yung massive vote buying na nakandang gawin, yung mga trending na ginagawa nila para... we know there is a big problem and we have to do something. Kaya yung sinasabi ko kaninang, will unite unity on the ground, it's very, very serious about it because yan ang tanging makaka-block dun sa ginagawa nila at makaka-expose dun sa system na ito. Kasi ang problema natin ngayon sa eleksyon ay problemang dinala rin ng mga trapo for quite a long time. At wala akong exception from Duterte to Dilawan. Kasi yung political dynasty, for instance, ay hindi na-implement yung constitutional provision. Now we have the political dynasties na sila yung nagdidikta kung sino yung mananalo. At everything is legalized through political dynasty. Even vote buying is legalized. So we know it will happen, but we have to act somehow. We have to mobilize our forces, gumala tayo sa iba't ibang lugar, konsensyahin natin yung dadali nila ng mga butante para matiyak natin na magkaroon ng malinis na halalan. Yun palagay ko ang kailangan gawin ngayon.
Okay, and from there, we're going to go to Ashley Acedillo, now spokesperson of Senator Panfilo Lacson. You're talking about post-endgame scenario here. What are you going to do once the toxicity still hangs, even after a winner is proclaimed? Ace.
Well, before we go to that, Carmina, no? Let's begin pa lang dun sa premise ng aming kandidato, no? Sila mismo, dalawa, si Ting Lacson and si Tito Soto. From the get-go, sinabi na nila that they want, during the course of the campaign, they want to elevate the discourse, okay? And that is, of course, a counter to that, to the, ano, no, to the zero-sum nature of our elections. Na pag sino manalo, kulelat lahat, nasa kangkungan lahat, and everyone is disregarded, whatever their causes and valid causes they may be. Pangalawa, nakikita na natin, no, yung viciousness ng campaign. Again, that harks back to the wisdom of from the get-go saying that we should not stoop down to that kind of gutter level campaigning. And it's sad to see that because even the close family members of a particular candidate have been dragged into the mess, no? So, nakakalungkot po yan. Now, punta tayo doon sa post-election scenario. Regardless of who wins, Carmina, once people have realized that tapos na yung personality-oriented politics, the entertainment-oriented politics, tapos na, we have to buckle down to work to solve our biggest problems, a spiraling debt, sirang ekonomiya dahil sa pandemya, yung marami pang nagugutom at who have entered the cycle of poverty again because of the pandemic, yung problema ng ating soberanya, and even the threat of a distant war in Europe and its after effects coming to haunt us domestically. These are just some of the problems that the next president will face. Okay. Regardless of who wins, Carmina, napakabigat ng mga problema nito. And one thing I just want to call on our people, no? If you don't realize that these problems are real and this require real solutions,
And this requires real leadership. At hindi nila maibit-bit yung realisasyon na yan sa pagboto nila. We will be compounding our problems post-election, Carmina. And that is the bigger problem to me than just winning this May 9 elections.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. I'd like to thank you both. Sunny Malencia there from Caliodi de Guzman's headquarters, and also Ashley Acedillo, spokesperson of Senator Pancho Relaxo. And gentlemen, we appreciate you again coming to the show. Thanks again. Take care and keep safe, both of you.
Thank you, Carmina. Good day, Sunny.
And from there, we move on to other news. Before we go, the 2020-2021 bar examination sees one of the highest passing rates in history. Mike Navalio now joins us with more on the results. Mike.
Hi, Carmina. The Philippines now has more than 8,000 new lawyers. This announcement coming from Bar Exams Chair Marvick Leon and here at the Supreme Court this morning. 11,790 applied to take the exam. 11,402 were able to finish the two-day exams in February. And out of this number, 8,241, or 72.28%, passed the exams. This is one of the highest passing rates in the history of bar exams in the country, next only to the 1954 bar exams, which had a 75.17% passing rate. Out of those passed, 761 obtained an 85, so 90% passing grade, considered exemplary performance. 14 takers obtained an excellence mark or higher than 90%. Now, unlike previous bar exams, there are no top 10 or bar top notchers this year. Justice Leonan said they wanted to do away with competition in the bar exams and wanted to focus on the performance of the schools. But they will release later today the list of excellent passers, the 14 passers we mentioned. Instead, Leonan mentioned earlier the schools with the highest passing rate and those with the most number of bar takers, which obtain an exemplary and excellent mark. Now, out of the schools with more than 100 bar takers, Ateneo de Manila University had a passing rate of 99.64%. That's almost all of their bar takers, first-time bar takers. The University of the Philippines ranked second. Next is San Beda University, University of San Carlos, and University of San Tomas, Manila. But when it comes to the individual performance, the University of the Philippines had the highest number of exemplary passers with 147, followed by Ateneo de Manila, San Beda University, University of San Carlos, Arellano University. And the University of the Philippines also had the most number of excellent passers with 4, followed by Ateneo de Manila University and University of San Carlos with 2, while the other schools, namely Arellano University, Ateneo de Davao, Far Eastern University, San Beda University, University of Cebu, and University of the Cordilleras, had one excellent passer each. So this is now the quickest turnaround for checking of bar exam answers. It was finished in just about 2 months. And Justice Leonan attributed this to the digitalized nature of the bar exam. He also had 24 bar examiners, and there were fewer questions compared to the previous bar exams. But compared to the previous exams, they had 11,000 bar takers, so that's still quite a considerable number of bar exam takers. According to the next bar exam chair, Justice Alfredo Benjamin Kagiwa, they will maintain the digitalized nature of the exams, but there will be changes in terms of the number of testing centers, and they will also try to bring it back to 4 days in November this year to bring a sense of normalcy to the bar exam. Carmina?
Thanks a lot, Mike Navalio, there joining us on the line back here in the studio. Aside from Agaton, Pag-asa is also monitoring Typhoon Malakas, which has entered the Philippine area of responsibility. Let's get an update now on the weather from ABS-CBN's resident meteorologist Ariel Rojas. Ariel?
Hey, good afternoon, Carmina. Before we go to Malakas, Tropical Depression Agaton was located in the vicinity of Balangiga, Eastern Samar, with maximum winds of 45 kilometers per hour near its center and with gusts up to 75 kilometers per hour. It is now moving eastward slowly. Tropical Cyclone Wind Signal Number 1 remains hoisted over southern Masbate, northern Samar, Samar, eastern Samar, Biliran, Leyte, southern Leyte, northeastern Cebu, including Camotes Islands and Dinagat Islands. At times, intense rains will still be expected in Bicol region and most of the Visayas, and widespread and serious flooding and landslides still threaten our kapamilyas in these areas. Scattered rains will also be experienced in Quezon, Mimaropa, the rest of Visayas, Zamboanga del Norte, and Dinagat Islands. This afternoon, thunderstorms will affect Metro Manila, Ilocos Region, Western Cordillera, Zambales, Tarlac, Pampanga, Bataan, and the rest of Zamboanga Peninsula, Northern Mindanao, Barm, and Caraga. Sea travel is still not allowed in areas under Signal Number 1, and flights may still be cancelled or postponed due to inclement weather in Southern Luzon, Visayas, and northern parts of Mindanao, and some roads may still be impassable due to either serious flooding or landslides. These are the recorded rainfall, by the way, by Agaton since April 9 in Baybay City Agrimet Station of Pag-asa. Almost 8 times as much as a month's worth of rain was dumped, totaling 908.2 millimeters. On April 9, 207.8 millimeters was recorded in D1 Eastern Samar, also more than a month's worth of rain. On April 10, 138 millimeters in Huban, Sorsogon. And yesterday, 172 millimeters in Roja City, almost twice as much as the normal rainfall for April in that area. Meanwhile, at 10 a.m. today, Typhoon Malakas entered the Philippine area of responsibility and was assigned the local name Bashang. It was last located 1,435 kilometers east of Southern Luzon, packing winds of up to 120 kilometers per hour and with gusts up to 150 kilometers per hour. It is moving north-northwestward at a speed of 20 kilometers per hour. It stay inside, the PAR will be short and there will be no direct effect on the weather condition of the country. But the remnant low of Agaton will merge with Bashang's circulation. That's the update on the weather. This is Ariel Rojas. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Ariel. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.